Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Welcome to the DMZ, everyone. I'm Matt Lewis. This is Bill Scher. And it's hot and getting a little mucky down here in your nation's capital, Bill. How are things up in Northampton?
Things are hot up here, but, you know, it's when it comes to humidity, I defer to Washington, D.C. You've got the corner. You got the market cornered on moisture. So congratulations.
Yeah. Well, it's no Charleston, South Carolina, but it does get sticky. It is a swamp, but we've had a pretty, you know, we had a cool, cold, long winter, and we actually had a spring this year, which we normally don't have, and so it hasn't been too hot yet. But we're now entering into that time of year when the tourists descend like locusts, and the heat rises from the asphalt.
I am glad winter is over. In particular, here in our lovely hamlet of Northampton, we have a very festive weekly farmers market. It's very, very kid friendly, so it's almost like having a playground. It's, you know, something to do with the kids on a Tuesday afternoon. I can feed them, you know, pizza and berries, and you know, make a day of it. But yesterday, they usually have a little concert or something there, which is always nice. But for some reason, this time they brought in face painting, and you have boys, so I imagine this isn't a trigger for you. Maybe your boys like face painting. I'm not going to judge, but certainly with two girls, whenever there's face painting around, it's just a total obsession, and it just never ends well. I don't know why organizers of children's events subject us to face painting. Excuse me for. I know we want to talk about more weightier matters today, but I had to wake up with, you know, a whole bunch of face paint on. I tried before to do. We got to wash off before bed. That's a disaster.
Yeah.
This face painting happened just before bedtime, so I it would be cruel just to wash it off immediately upon getting home. But now you wake up and you have a tiger face when you go to bed, and you look like a street urchin when you wake up, and I got to deal with that while I get the kids to school. Who created this substance?
A million little indignities, my friend.
What's that, sir?
A million little indignities. Yeah, no, this is the kind of thing. And let me just rant about something else here. if this is a different, this is sort of different, but it's the same. It's the same about the world sort of not caring. How you as a father feel and presenting problems. So you'll get this. This is hard to explain and people won't understand why it's such a big deal. But a lot of times I will go into a restaurant and I will be carrying a kid in one hand and a diaper bag in the other. I've got my hands full and I need them to bring a high chair for my kid. And usually the waitress or waiter or whatever brings over the high chair. And there's this little piece of cloth that goes, it's a vertical piece of cloth, and their legs are supposed to go around
it,
right? It helps if that piece of cloth is put in the center. And a really good waiter or waitress or whatever would make sure that that little vertical piece of cloth is in the center. But no, they almost always have it on the end. So I have to do that while holding the kid. This is just a small thing that would make my life easier. Then please get rid of all the glasses. If there are like steak knives on the table or glasses that could shatter or break, if you put a child in a high chair next to the table, it might be smart to move that.
You got to find the right restaurants. There are certain restaurants that have a trained staff, you know. They're not going to put parsley on the pasta. They're going to give you a sippy cup. They're going to bring out the kids' food first. You know, the little things that just make that whole experience a lot less painful for everybody. You know, some restaurants have that down and some don't.
You just sent me on another rant, my friend. Picture this.
Okay.
Frederick, Maryland, 1996. A young Matt Lewis is working at a now defunct famous institution called Watson's, famous for their fried chicken in downtown Frederick, Maryland. There's a manager who will remain nameless, who was always riding yours truly. And I was waiting. I'm not a good waiter, should not be a waiter, but I happened to be waiting tables that day.
Larry Hogan walks in, right? Governor Larry Hogan?
Larry Hogan is not the villain of this
Oh,
story.
okay.
I'm waiting tables in this family. They got a little kid, and the kid's crying, and the woman says, the mom says, "Would it be possible, please, just to get him a chicken leg? And that'll just make everybody more comfortable. He'll be happier. We can enjoy. The people next to us won't hear a crying baby." So I said, sure, because in my mind, the customer is always right. I went and I broke the fourth wall here, or whatever it's called, right? Because there's a facade that you order your chicken, I go out and kill it, you know, defeather it, and deep fry it just for you. But in fact,
I wouldn't expect such farm to table service in Frederick, Maryland, circa 1996.
Right, so I go and I bring back a little a chicken leg for this child, and he's happy, and mom's happy, and everybody else is happy. And then my manager pulls me aside and reams me for breaking down the fourth wall and
going off menu.
And then she says, "Well, again, the notion is that we don't just have, you know, you don't want people to sort of know you just have fried chicken sitting around, you know, under heat lamps." And I went and got this kid a piece of chicken right away, which I guess destroys the illusion. But, you know, the customer's always right. Everybody was happy. I was happy. I'm going to get a better tip. This lady was happy. Her kid's happy. The people sitting next to him were happy. And then the manager says to me, "You need to learn to do things the Watson's way." The Watson's way. And Adam Carolla has this book called Not Taco Bell Material, because he couldn't get hired at Taco Bell. And whenever I write my sort of memoir, it's going to be called Not the Watson's Way. So anyway,
why would you?
I
not
stole
want
your
a,
rant.
Why would you not
I
want stole... that kid to have a mouthful of chicken so he's quiet? I mean, I that's what I do when I go to restaurants. I go to restaurants where I say, "Hey, look, can you bring this out right now? Just make everybody happy." And I usually don't have a problem with that.
Well, and this is what reasonable, rational people would do, Bill, is bring that child a chicken leg. But apparently there was a procedure. There was a process that I, you know, went around, and this is not to be tolerated. You cannot think for yourself, Bill. And by the way, to the degree, you know, I do realize that as a conservative, I'm a little different maybe than some. Like, I don't really like big business or trust them, and I know what it's like to be treated sort of like a machine or very to be incredibly expendable, I do not like the man for that reason. And I think that my experience working, like, I was ready to unionize this restaurant, Bill. I should have probably tried to do it. But the interesting thing was, there were people, I was just at this point, I had just taken like a semester off from college and I was working full time, but there were people there who'd been there for like 20 or 30 years, and they were like, "Yeah, I just took a semester off in 1975. And here I am." And they were so deferential to the owners. Like, they were like, I was the one who was like, you know, fight the power, like this, you know. Of course, I had the luxury of sort of being that way because I, you know, I didn't have kids and a mortgage. But like, the people who'd been there forever were the most deferential and the most worried about breaking protocol and doing things that, you know, that made sense, even though if they weren't in the handbook. So anyway,
the lesson of the story is that rigid, soul-crushing, bureaucratic rules and regulations are not just the province of government. They can be the province of business as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I think I've written recently and talked about, you know, big business and big, not that this was big business, but I do think that, like, you know, there are two sort of different groups of people are out to screw you, and one of them's trying to make a profit, make a buck off your ignorance, and the other one's government. So, well, so either way, that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. But as a parent, I just want the little thing. Just put that, all I ask for is that little vertical, like, leather flap or whatever, strap. Put it in the middle so I can just slide my kid in the seat and clear away the breakable glass and the steak knives, and we'll be fine.
Well, despite the importance of ridding the world of face paint and sharp objects near children, there's bigger news afoot, which is your contribution to society Your Wisdom for the Republican Party, your book, Too Dumb to Fail, is now available for pre-order with a That's snazzy right, cover. Is it Amazon? Is it Barnes & Noble? Where can folks get it?
It is on Amazon. It is on Barnes & Noble. What is it? Books a Million. You can pre-order the book, and you should. By the way, let me just make this pitch. This is going to be shameless self-promotion and a desperate pitch, but I think you guys owe me. Bill and I do this every week. We do make, now in fairness, the Blogging Hits folks do pay us millions of dollars to do this. But you don't have to pay to get to enjoy our little banter back and forth. We've been doing this for, I don't know, maybe 5 years or something. Never have I asked you to do me a favor, but now I am. We need to pre-order this book. You know, this is how it goes. So if you like what I have to say here, or even if you don't, go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, go to Books A Million, wherever you buy your books, and just pre-order it. I don't think that's asking too much.
And I got to say, I have seen, early stages of the book.
Yes.
A lot of times when professional writers, professional talkers put out a book, you might just be getting all the stuff that you have read already. And therefore, it doesn't seem very, very interesting. This is not that book. I mean, I think maybe certain arguments you might have heard from Matt before, but there's a lot of stuff in here that's fresh, perspectives on things you probably haven't seen before. I think there's gonna be a lot of stuff for the Republican Party and the conservative movement to that challenges their presumptions and their worldview. That's going to spark a lot of interesting discussion. So I think you want to get it on the ground floor of that dialogue. And get this book as soon as possible. And it's going to come out right before the Iowa caucuses. Is that right?
That's right. I'm hoping that it can help make a splash, drive the debate and discussion about the future of the Republican Party, the future of the conservative movement. I truly believe this message that it would, you know, now I'm sure there will be people who do not like the fact that I am being critical of the current state of conservatism and the GOP. But it's constructive criticism. I truly believe that it's the way forward. And I think it raises some issues that maybe some sacred cows that haven't been talked about much that people don't really want to get into. And I hope it does contribute to the debate coming out right before Iowa. You know, I'm thinking, you know, the stuff that I'm writing about really, I think is going to be evergreen. I mean, it's going to last, you know, hopefully it'll be relevant for years, but it should be especially timely and relevant for the big soul searching moment that Republicans are going to have starting, you know, from maybe January to March is going to be a really key important time when they come up with a nominee. And I do think that a lot of what's wrong with the Republican Party and conservatism could be set straight based on whom, if they were to nominate the right person. You know, it's good to have these policy discussions and soul searching, but a lot of times, ultimately, it's someone who becomes the leader who actually can implement change. Clearly, I think that was the way with Reagan. You know, his leadership helped usher in an era that sustained conservatism and Republicans for many, many years. And I think sadly has finally exhausted itself in some ways, not in all ways.
No, obviously.
Anyway, I hope it's controversial.
I think it is. And I say it in a good way, in that I think it's going to spark useful, productive discussion. And obviously you can't give away the store here before the book comes out, but I'm curious, as you see the Republican field emerge and tentative steps towards engagement between Republican candidates has begun, do you have a sense that, I mean, the book is called Too Dumb to Fail. You're talking about how Republican anti-intellectualism has weighed down the party's long-term prospects, even if it has produced some short-term victories here and there. What's your sense of the direction this field is going? Are they acting smarter? Is your book too late? Have they already figured this stuff out and they're already putting forth sharper, more sophisticated, more holistic policy ideas and ideologies? Or do you Are you fearing a just a repeat of 2008, 2012, another clown card, another chance for Republicans to be ridiculed and alienated in swing areas?
I mean, I think the verdict's still out on that right now, Bill. I think that, you know, clearly there are very smart people running. Bobby Jindal, you know, is going to run, it looks like. He's a Rhodes Scholar, among, you know, many things to recommend him, both academically and professionally. And yet sometimes he dumbs down his message. And that's part of the problem. It's part of what the book's about. People like Ted Cruz, obviously highly intelligent, but not always wise, hasn't always acted wisely. And I talk about the difference between sort of between thoughtfulness and wisdom and just, you know, IQ. I mean, there's a lot of angles to look at here. Then there's, you know, part of the book talks about the fact that, you know, Republicans simply can't write off people, urbanites, people who are happen to be college graduates or college educated, Hispanics. In other words, the Republican Party can't just be a party for old white people living in rural areas. And that's sort of what it's in danger of becoming. And clearly, I think someone like Marco Rubio, among others, are poised to be a potential solution to that problem. So I think that there's a lot of talent out there. In some ways, this large field could be thought of as an embarrassment of riches. I've heard a lot of liberals sort of quietly say that they envy the Republican Party right now having so many options as opposed to the Democratic Party that just has Hillary. By the same token, though, I think we've seen this replayed over and over again the last several cycles. I think Republicans have lost the popular vote 5 out of the past 6 presidential elections. Clearly, the last 2 cycles, you know, the clown car thing did emerge and they ended up looking really, really silly and dumb. I think the verdict's still out this time. I think the timing for this book is actually almost perfect. Some of these points I've been making years ago would not have been receptive. It would not have been welcome. You know, in the past when I would criticize like a Christine O'Donnell or a Sarah Palin, say like in 2010, I would be excoriated. And others, you know, there were it wasn't just me, but other conservatives that I know who dared to even have a mild rebuke against, say, Sharon Angle or Christine O'Donnell or others for anti-intellectualism, playing the victim card, other things that are really unconservative. We were strongly rebuked, and I don't think that the folks who really need to hear this message would have been open and receptive to it. I think we're actually now coming to a moment where after having lost so much and sort of gained some wisdom, a lot of the people who came into the movement maybe after 9/11 or during the Tea Party movement have reached a certain maturation level. And so I think they're a little more receptive to this message. So I'm really hoping that the timing is going to be perfect here, not just in terms of hopefully selling a lot of books, and please do pre-order, but also in terms of actually having an impact. You know, it's fine. Look, if liberals read this book and they enjoy some Schadenfreude, that's fine. If they read it just for fun or to learn something, that's great. But, you know, part of my hope really is that conservatives actually take some of this constructive criticism and advice to heart.
Yeah, I mean, I think folks on the left should read it, you know, not for Schadenfreude purposes, but to see. I mean, I think there is a sincere desire on the left to have sort of a worthy sparring partner and to have richer debate. And you know, if you're on the left, you're not going to agree with a lot of what you have to say. It may obviously challenge certain points that you make on various grounds, but it's still useful to see here is what a more enlightened conservatism would look like. Maybe, just maybe, they're going to take his advice. And if you're on the left, you better be prepared for the day when it's not going to be so easy to mock a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul or a Mike Huckabee, that you're actually going to have to step up your game to deal with a real challenge, a real fight over, you know, smart policy ideas that may conflict with your philosophies. So in that sense, I would certainly recommend people on the left check it out. But
Yeah.
I
No, I think
wonder
there's
what.
a da- I think there is a danger. I think there is a danger for liberals, Bill, to dismiss these conservatives, these Republicans, and to assume that they're going to keep doing stupid things and saying stupid things. If you're mocking somebody strategically, that's a different thing because mockery actually is a very effective weapon. But if you're taking them lightly, if liberals are taking these guys too lightly, if they've been lulled into a false sense of security, that's a huge problem for the left. Let me also just say real quickly, one of the things, Bill, that I tackle in this book, and it's harkens to the Too Dumb to Fail title, which I think has, I don't know, there's a lot of things that I tie back to that title, but one of the things is the penchant on the right now. What's the Eric Hoffer line? Is it it starts off as a great cause, turns into a movement, turns into a business, and ends up as a racket, something like that. I'm paraphrasing. There have been people on the right who individually prosper while doing harm to the movement. I mean, I haven't read Ann Coulter's new book about Adios Amigos or whatever, and but I imagine that it's possible that book might be an example of somebody who's prospering as an individual, but maybe cumulatively the conservative movement loses. Again, haven't read it yet, don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me. This is a
I don't think
common
you're walking out on a
problem.
limb there. I think that's a pretty safe bet.
I don't know. I don't want to, I hate to, as somebody who's now written or is writing a book, it's nice if people read it before they criticize it. So
I
I
mean,
am
I'm pretty
sensitive
sure
to
if you've
that,
read one Ann
but
Coulter
that's
book,
part of
you
the
have read all
problem.
Ann Coulter books.
Well, yeah, I'm an aficionado of many of them. I know I've had her. I've read some of them because I've had her on. I think her book Demonic is quite good, and she came on my podcast to talk about it. So I'm not totally ignorant of her oeuvre, her catalog. But yeah, anyway, this is a problem that the right faces, that there are perverse incentives whereby individuals, politicians, commentators, whatever, can prosper off of things that actually hurt the brand collectively. So
Well,
that's one of the.
if I can segue a bit, we had this episode a few days ago where Josh Duggar, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly,
Duggar.
Duggar, who is one of the people on
Duggar,
this
yeah.
19 and Counting reality TV show, showing off the quiverful movement where you reproduce as much as possible, which is a obscure Christian movement. Based on that celebrity, this young adult was Nate had a high up position with the Family Action Council, which is
Family
even
Research Count, Family
Family Research
FRC
Council, sorry.
Action.
Family Research Council
FRC
Action, right?
Action. So is their political arm of the Family Research Council.
Right. So this
Yeah.
guy's not even 30 years old, doesn't even have a background in political campaigns, but he's a reality TV star, gets this high profile position. Turns out that he engaged in whatever we technically call rape or incest, but some forcible fondling is what I've seen reported. I'm not clear if there were formal charges ever brought, but involved with his sisters, I believe one other child outside of his family, there was some interaction with police, but it sort of didn't get brought up the chain. Formal charges weren't filed. Family kind of dealt with it in an internal way, but the papers finally came to light. And Mike Huckabee, who was endorsed by the Duggars, is standing by the family and saying, he's forgiven. Kid made a mistake. But he turned to God and he's been forgiven. All's good now. No talk about the fact that there was a crime committed here that was not properly reported to the authorities. And it's also come out that the patriarch of the family had previously said that incest is a capital crime as a way to justify not having a rape and incest exception to anti-abortion laws. Basically say, look, incest is a capital crime anyway, so you need to make that into an exception to an anti-abortion statute. obviously not following through on that when it comes to his own family. What do you make of Huckabee standing by these folks? Is he an outlier here, or is there a larger appetite of conservatism to circle the wagons, even with some sort of heinous situation as this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly an impulse. I think Huckabee had a specific tie to the Duggar family. I mean, he was governor of Arkansas. I think that the patriarch actually was in the state senate or the state house, has endorsed Huckabee, they've helped Huckabee in the past. So clearly they have a connection. Ron Fournier over at National Journal wrote a really hard-hitting piece about Huckabee's sort of pattern of not taking seriously sexual predators. Pretty hard-hitting piece, but that's what we do as columnists. To me, Bill, I wrote about this from a slightly different angle, which was kind of putting aside the main point, which plenty of other people were going to talk about, the actual, I don't even know if I have to say alleged, his actual actions. To me, the interesting thing, or the thing that I felt that I could sort of comment on, was here you have a 25-year-old guy whose last experience was working or managing, I'm not sure, a used car lot in Arkansas, who immediately becomes president of FRC Action. And I think that's kind of a disservice to a lot of people, including Josh Duggar and FRC Action. And this speaks to how conservatives, sort of badmouth Hollywood, talk about, lament Hollywood. But we're so desperate for celebrities of our own that we take these C-list celebrities and just promote them and hold them up on high. I mean, think of how many people probably had worked to get that promotion at FRC Action who were passed over by this 25-year-old minor celebrity, who had, as far as I know, no experience in working in a social conservative organization. Maybe we'd have been better off if this guy had gotten a job working sort of as a staffer, and this stuff might have come out. What the Duggars should have done was they should have done it. They should have brought this out themselves. I don't mean to pass over the horridness of what he did, but from a solely public relations aspect, knowing that this could have come out, that it could have leaked out, they should have done an episode about this, before he ever worked at FRC Action. They should have, that way they could have timed it, framed it, told the story. They could have had an episode about, repentance and someone, getting things back together. That way they could have framed it. Maybe there's an episode where he talks to the victims. I mean, I don't know if they would, they would obviously have to consent to that. But whatever the case may be, the fact that conservatives, this is the whole Phil Robertson Duck Dynasty thing. This explains the Donald Trump, the fact that Donald, if there were a debate held today, according to the Fox News rules, where the top 10 people polling, Donald Trump would get in the debate, but Carly Fiorina and John Kasich wouldn't. I think this speaks to from a political standpoint, to a larger issue about how conservatives and Republicans just are in love with celebrities and will promote them to positions they have no business being in. And I think it's ironic and troubling. And frankly, it's actually part of the book. I wrote the book, the first draft before the Duggar incident happened, but I talk about this issue and this problem in the book.
All right, so do you think that Huckabee is going to help them maintain their standing in social conservative circles, or is he really on his own here and everyone else in the conservative movement is recoiling from the family at this point?
That's a good question. I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, what I know, my interaction have been with people who are, you know, sort of movement conservatives who live inside the Beltway, who work in politics. And they essentially, you might not be surprised, they kind of share my opinion of this, that like, what was this guy knowing that he had this on his record or that this could come out? What was he doing going to work at FRC? Why would FRC hire him at the age of 25, you know, to be in this position? That's the kind of thing that the people that I'm sort of bumping into are talking about. Now, out around the country, when people watch 19 Kids and Counting, which now has the title seems a little more creepy and disturbing than it might have, I don't know how the sort of rank and file conservatives in places like Iowa, for example, are going to feel about this. I mean, on one hand, I could see it sort of cutting both ways. I could see the instinct, which would be to sort of go into a defensive posture and to try to attack this guy as kind of one of our own. Yeah, but they do worse stuff, and this guy's repented, and this guy's, you know, they're just taking him down because he's a Christian. If he had committed some less, you know, if he had committed some other act of sin, or if he wasn't a Christian, he had committed some other act of sin or a crime, that would be okay. But because he's a Christian, he's going to be judged more, you know, more harshly. Maybe some will adopt that kind of reflexive, defensive posture. I could see other Christians and other conservatives being utterly turned off, obviously, by what he did. So I don't know that I can really answer that question yet, Bill.
Well, shifting to other matters, unrelated to Too Dumb to Fail, available for pre-order. We have this spectacle in the Congress where the Patriot Act is going to expire in a week, or at least provisions that maintain the surveillance techniques that have been so controversial since the Edward Snowden leaks. And I would have thought they would have an easier time reauthorizing it, maybe doing some tweaks to the program, but not gutting it in time, especially because you have a more conservative Congress since the past midterm than you had last year, when the House and Senate could not agree on what to do. They had a version pass the House called the USA Freedom Act, which does one of the reforms that Obama said he was comfortable with, which is having the telecom companies hold the data, and the government's not holding the data, but the government could still request to get it. The idea being that the NSA could still get what they needed to get when they needed it. But the House Republicans were by and large comfortable with that. It passed the pretty strong bipartisan vote. But Mitch McConnell is insisting on essentially no changes, and putting daylight between him and Boehner. And Rand Paul is being an absolutist the other way, and not even allowing for the smallest extension of the current law while they work out these divisions. And now you have a risk of the whole thing expiring in a matter of days, which I still don't believe is going to happen. I generally put my money on the intelligence state in these sorts of political battles.
When did they go on vacation?
Well, they're in recess right now.
They're in recess now. They come back.
They come back towards the end of the week, and then they have, you know, essentially 2 days to do something so it doesn't just flat out expire. Even if it's just a short extension, they got to do something. And forgive me for not knowing all the ins and outs of the parliamentary issues here. My sense was that Rand Paul was able to act unilaterally because they were doing it on the fly, and it wasn't a formal cloture vote with, you know, a 3-day window. So McConnell couldn't ram something through unanimous consent. I think that's what happened. Someone correct me in the thread if I'm mistaken. So my guess is that with a bit more time to play with, you could get 60 votes to do some sort of extension, if not an actual compromise. But are you surprised? I mean, is Rand Paul speaking to a large faction of the Republican Party at this point, or is he really just again, is he a lone gun, and the Republican Party has moved way into the hawkish camp again in the, you know, since ISIS broke big.
Well, I don't know. I think that we're sort of in the battle for the heart and soul of where this, you know, not to plug Too Dumb to Fail again, but this, I do think that there's soul searching going on, and I think one of the areas where that's still happening is in regards to this issue. I think it sort of depends who's the last guy who talked. I think that if you're a sort of average conservative Republican voter, used to kind of know what the orthodoxy was. You know, we were against gay marriage, we were for, you know, going into Iraq, whatever. It didn't have to necessarily be coherent, but it was sort of easy to know, like, this is our 10, these are the 10 things that we believe in. We're for low taxes, whatever. And I think, you know, if the last person you hear is Marco Rubio, then maybe you have a different perspective than if the last person you hear is Rand Paul. It's really unclear to me where the sort of conservative movement is on this.
But Rand is slowly by himself in the presidential field. I don't feel I've heard another presidential candidate echoing what he's saying.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, 6 months ago there was this bill, was it the USA Freedom Act, I think it was called?
Well, that's what passed the House.
Which would have, right, but it was in the Senate too. I mean, it didn't pass the Senate, but Mike Lee and Ted Cruz were co-sponsors of this bill.
I think Lee is still the lead sponsor of it.
And it would have, as far as I could tell, it would have basically gotten rid of the most onerous problems with the NSA while preserving, you know, the parts of the Patriot Act that we presumably need to keep us safe. And it seemed like a good compromise. And I was arguing, you better pass this now before we enter into the presidential race in earnest. Because if you can't reauthorize it now and fix it now, how are you going to do it in June when people are jockeying for political position? And I think maybe that's kind of what we're seeing is the fruit. You know, maybe I was kind of right about that. You know, I'm not saying that they won't pass it. I think you tend to think that the 11th hour they'll find a way to reauthorize it. But it did seem to me that like last November or whenever it came up would have been a better time than this June.
Well, I mean, you have this pattern in the Senate, where this governing by crisis pattern where, you know, nothing gets done till the absolute last minute all the time. Everyone holds out to try to get their last little crumb. You saw this with the fast track vote too, where you had your 13 Democrats who essentially were pro fast track. There wasn't all that much doubt whether they were going to vote, but they held out to see what they could get. And what they got was a commitment from McConnell they would hold the vote on reauthorizing the Export Import Bank. That was their last minute demand.
Well, let me tell you where I'm at. Let me tell you where I'm at personally on this Patriot Act, and you tell me whose camp I fit into, if you know. So on one hand, I do not believe that the government should be able to collect my metadata. In other words, I don't think that they should be scooping up all the people, all the phone numbers that I call, because to me that's a suspicionless search. If they suspect that I'm guilty of something, then they could get a warrant and they could have access to that. But without suspicion, to just scoop up my metadata, I don't think that that's constitutional. However, I think if it's someone, you know, an international call, let's say I'm talking to people in Saudi Arabia or something, now all of a sudden I think that's a different deal. Obviously, if they have reason to suspect me of something, if they can get a judge to sign off on that, then by all means, go for it. So that's kind of the space that I'm in. Where does that put me? Do you know?
I mean, I think, you know, and forgive me for not being, you know, super expert on the latest and greatest. I mean, I think that puts you where the USA Freedom Act is right now, where, you know, the government doesn't hold the metadata, but they can access the metadata when they have cause to do so. I know there is debate within the civil libertarian community whether that is enough of a reform. There are some folks saying it's a step in, and some folks saying it's insufficient because it's be pretty easy for the NSA to still get it. It's sort of a matter of degree. How hard do you want to make it? And you know what hurdles do you want the NSA to have to jump through to get it? Certainly the Mike Lee position is this is good enough. The Rand Paul position seems to be that it isn't. And I think that there's divide on the left on that same token as well. My general sense as far as the public is concerned is we don't like ISIS. We want to get them. And we're pretty comfortable with we don't want to see a repeat of the Boston Marathon bombing. We don't want to see a repeat of Fort Hood. We want to find these lone wolves. We want there to be using all of our technological tools to pinpoint people before they do great harm.
My point too, where I was saying that people, I feel like people are kind of like on both sides of this issue, and even conservatives. And I feel like the same thing, like if you come from a Rand Paul rally, you're going to sort of be leading one way. And then God forbid, if there's some sort of a terrorist attack even in Washington, D.C. this weekend, on the mall, we had this Rolling Thunder thing with the bikers or whatever do this parade. And the police exploded a pressure cooker. They found, I guess it was a police dog that keyed on a pressure cooker in a car parked along the parade route. I think it turned out that it was someone who had a food truck that had lost the truck but kept the equipment or something. And I think it was harmless. But the police don't know that, right? And all it takes is something like that, and all of a sudden I think we all go to, this tension between liberty and security really depends on how much you feel like you need security at a given moment.
Well, I think people don't trust the government enough to just say, do whatever. they want there to be checks and balances. They want there to be judicial review and all that sort of thing. But they don't want the government to say, c'est la vie. We don't do whatever. If a terrorist is a bad thing, that's on the terrorist, and we all need to have keep stiff upper lip. Terrorism isn't that big of a scourge of society. Doesn't actually kill that many people. So better to not do anything and accept that life is messy and complicated, and sometimes bad things happen, and we do our best to soldier on. I think most folks are in the middle, where they want to see some level of check and balance, but they still want to see the government still be forward-leaning on trying to stop terrorist attacks before they can happen. And I think that's where, even you kind of hear that talk from the Rand Paul side of things in the abstract, but when it comes down to it, they seem to always be on the side of opposing any kind of reform at all, because they just don't want to see the surveillance techniques in place, period. And I think that is generally a losing position politically. I think it's also wrong on the merits, but I don't see that being a winning calling card for Rand. I mean, obviously it makes his hardcore supporters happy, but I have a hard time seeing that getting him to even 30% in the polls, which you would need to get to win a multi-candidate primary.
All right, Bill. Well, I guess we're running out of time, but let me just real quickly go through some politics here, because we had Bernie Sanders announced yesterday. I think Rick Santorum just announced to George Stephanopoulos, of all people.
Really?
While we were taping this.
That boycott didn't last.
I know, and frankly, I think they let him off the hook. I think Stephanopoulos was vulnerable, and you had, I think, Mike Lee and Rand Paul essentially saying they wouldn't go on a show.
Right, but Mitch McConnell went on last week.
And Marco Rubio came out and said, oh, I love Stephanopoulos. He's great. And now you have Rick Santorum. So, you know, you can basically give money to the Clintons all you want. You can help hold your conference calls with Rahm Emanuel and Carville and Bagala all you want. Hell, you could even bring up random questions about a war on women that doesn't exist in a debate. And we'll keep coming back for more. So anyway, Bernie Sanders, Rick Santorum. I think we got Pataki, Lindsey Graham, and Rick Perry set to announce imminently. And Martin O'Malley as well. So
Bernie went yesterday.
Bernie yesterday, right?
So he actually announced before, but he had his first rally yesterday.
Which I think was something like 4,000 to 5,000 people showed up at this thing. It was a pretty good turnout, I think.
Lovely day in Lake Champlain, Vermont, a place I plan to visit later in the summer. It's a beautiful state.
Scenery. I was on Real Time with Bill Maher with Bernie Sanders in 2012. Bill, that's my only connection to the man.
And do you guys still write?
What's that?
Do you still write? Are you still pen pals?
We do not keep in close touch, but
life gets away from you.
I've not spoken to the man since. anyway, that's my connection.
We're now at a point in the Republican field where the hammers come down. Fox News says 10 candidates tops. CNN says we're going to do 10 for one, and the losers get to sit at the kids' table for a losers' debate warm-up. And it's going to be based on polls, straight-up polls. They didn't take my idea to do it based on money. I'm sad about that. But then the pressure's on to clear these poll thresholds, and it doesn't seem to be warding other candidates from jumping in. They still see they got a shot. They guess maybe I'll be the one that gets the 5% and I'll get in. So the big culling is going to happen in a few months. Is this going to be difficult for the party? Lots of complaining, lots of pointing fingers at the establishment forced these thresholds on the media, and because the RNC sanctioned the debates, and now more diverse voices are being shut out of the party.
Well, let me start with my disclaimer that my wife consults for Rick Peck, and say I think we're okay because CNN, which I think holds a second debate, has come up with a two-tiered system. So a lot of the people who are excluded from the first Fox debate will fairly quickly be able to get into the second debate. I think also because it's Fox and the RNC, if this were a mainstream sort of MSM media outlet keeping you out, you could probably score some political points by talking about how the man's keeping you down and the establishment. And you could go against ABC and the RNC, let's say, or NBC and the RNC. But because it's Fox and the RNC, probably won't happen. I still wonder if you might not be able to hold a shadow thing with like Periscope, right? So if you're John Kasich and Bobby Jindal and I don't know, name another name that might not be in the debate. I think Rick Perry would make it in now, but let's say he didn't. I mean, you could potentially hold a rival debate or something on Periscope. That technology, live stream it certainly exists, and you could maybe get a little press, or you could do it right after the debate. Let them have their debate, and then you could do your own debate that's sort of live streamed and get a little attention and, mildly criticize what people said in the actual debate. So I think there are ways to make hay or to make some lemonade out of the lemons of not being in the first debate. I don't think you'll see people completely go rogue because it's early on. And I don't think they want to make an enemy of Fox at that point. That's my take. What do you think?
Well, I think that is the creative challenge. If you get shut out, how do you turn it around for yourself? If you whine, I mean, you see this in all presidential campaigns. Someone gets shut out of the debate, third-tier candidate, they stage some protest outside and they complain and say it's unfair. But whining doesn't get you anywhere. You got to do something to prove you do belong there. That not just that you've got your signatures in, but that you're offering something that is getting people excited. And I think that is the challenge for anyone who's polling at 1% or low right now, it's the burden is on you to do something to bring those poll numbers up. And what's more unusual this time around than other years is that pressure to do something is happening very soon. You gotta step up your game now.
Right, but the problem is, one of the ways to raise your poll numbers is to have a good debate performance, which you can't have if you don't have high poll numbers. So, and look, it is absurd to think that, as I alluded earlier, that Donald Trump, if you're worried about the brand and the image of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, it's absurd to think that Donald Trump will get into a debate and that John Kasich, who is the governor of Ohio, who I think won with like 64% of the vote his reelection, wouldn't make it in the debate. Or Bobby Jindal, who's a former congressman, a two-term governor, I think he ran the Hospitals Association of Hospitals in Louisiana, a Rhodes Scholar, that he would not make it in a debate, and yet Donald Trump
I thought it was
would.
Weird last so time it just around. Seems... You know, Buddy Romer, who was a governor of Louisiana, perfectly respectable politician, he was totally shut out of the
and
debates.
And a former congressman as well.
Right. You know, I mean, the guy, perfectly good resume to run for president, but he was running, he had an unorthodox platform. But Gary Johnson got in some debates, and he also had he had an even wackier platform from my perspective. You know, these things can be kind of arbitrary, and it's not fair, but no, life isn't fair. It's your job as the candidate to thrive in the system that you are in. I mean, that is the nature of all politics. If you can't find a way in a social media age, you know, broadcast television is not the only way to get your message out anymore. You have other tools at your disposal to build up a following. Yep. You got to do it and prove yourself.
Yeah, and so I think it would be smart for these guys who don't get in the debate. Don't just whine about it. Don't just play the victim, but do something about it. You can make lemonade out of this lemon. You can use it, and you can, you know, why not get Kasich and Jindal and whomever together, three or four candidates, and do something, you know, live stream it, whatever, and you know, have a debate and get
or get,
some attention,
get a hold of Bernie, get a hold of Bernie or O'Malley or Lincoln Shaver or Jim Webb and say, look, let's have a cross-party debate. They can't stop us. Let's do it.
And I think you would force the media to cover it. I think that the media is so desperate for content now. How could they not cover if you had, you know, Jindal and Kasich and Pataki up against Bernie and O'Malley and Jim Webb, let's say, having a debate? And then go get someone good to moderate it, for that matter, you know? Someone who's legit, but not... You know, but not an insider. I'm available. I'm just saying. So Bill and Matt, we could both do it. You know, we could moderate that.
I can make time. I can work on my schedule.
But I will say this in fairness to Fox and the RNC. I mean, I am sympathetic to the fact that you cannot have 20 people on a stage and expect to have a nuanced or even reasonable debate. It's just impossible to manage logistically. So you either have multiple tiers or somebody good gets cut out. And you have to have some criteria. Your idea about money, who raises the most money, would probably actually be a better predictor. I think the optics are just too bad for that to be the criteria. So, you know, polling has sort of traditionally been the way to do it. So this is, you know, this is what it is.
All right. I got to jump. It's always good talking to you. Go pre-order Too Dumb to Fail by Matt K. Lewis.
Yes.
Hot book of 2016.
I will, every day that goes by that you do not order Too Dumb to Fail, I will kill a puppy. So.
This is the Bill Frist marketing method?
It's whatever works, baby, marketing method. I would not do that. I'm a pug lover, as you know. I even have a t-shirt. You can find it on my Instagram account that says Pugs Not Drugs. So that's my motto. Too Dumb to Fail is also my motto. Thanks, Bill, and thank you all for your continued support. I appreciate you getting that book and pre-ordering it so it shows up early and my publisher doesn't decide to come in here and cancel me. Cannot have that. Cheers.
Excellent. Take care, everybody.
All right, buddy. Thanks.